You're listening to the Vanu Podcast, the podcast making you invulnerable to the coercion of the state and the servile society. Visit our website for free resources to aid you in your pursuit of self-liberation. Old Vanu publications, podcasts, guest articles, and much more. Go to VanuPodcast.com. And now, your hosts, Shane and Jason.
And welcome to the Vanu Podcast, the podcast making you invulnerable to the coercion of the state and the servile society. I'm your host, Shane, coming to you live from the homestead here in Southern Illinois. This podcast and everything found on the website is covered by a BIPCOT, no government license, so allows reuse and modification to anyone except for governments and the agents thereof. Learn more by visiting BIPCOT.org. So real quick, the audiobook for Second Realm Book on Strategy is now available on Audible and Amazon. As a special offer, you can snag a free download of the audiobook by visiting libertyunderattack.com/SRAudio and by signing up for a free trial via Audible. It doesn't cost you a penny, and it helps us out a lot, so we do appreciate that. So thanks in advance. On that note, please check out our sponsor, Liberty Attack Publications. Totally understand that funds may be tight right now since the government has basically made it illegal for people to go to work. That's what's happening. Certainly understand if funds may be tight right now. But if you're looking for some great anarchist reading material, we've got you covered via LUA Publications. You can check out our full catalog by visiting libertyunderattack.com, as well as our special bundles. And of course, if you're in lockdown somewhere and are in desperate need of some reading material, please get in contact, and I'll get you a free digital self-liberation bundle to help you and hopefully keep you inspired through these trying times. My email is shane@libertyunderattack.com, or just send a message on social media. So today I welcome back my friend and colleague Matthew Raymer. Matthew is an American expat who moved to the Philippines decades ago. He's also the lead developer for our as-of-now-defunct project called Darklance, and an entrepreneur more generally. He's also the one we can thank for hosting my websites and this podcast feed. He's a very important part of what we do here behind the scenes, but he kind of makes it all come together. So, I'll definitely have him provide a more complete bio and background. But without further ado, Matthew, welcome back to the podcast, sir. It's a pleasure to be speaking with you. How are you doing?
Oh, we're doing fine, Shane. It's, you know, we're in what would be considered a full lockdown here. I'm in northern Luzon, so whenever someone thinks of the Philippines, they really shouldn't be thinking of where I'm at, because this place is so different than the rest of the country. It's almost a different country entirely. But it still has the same bludgies in charge. So they've decided that they want to lock us down. The situation as far as the coronavirus is anticlimactic. It's very hard. It almost seems like they're begging people to get sick. We are so close to China. Let me just tell you my opinion about this.
Yeah, please do.
We're so close to China. We're so close to China that, we know that the first case in China was November 17. The first case that the Taiwanese noticed was December 31, which means that there were asymptomatic people floating around Taiwan and the Philippines as early as December. We know the first death, or excuse me, I can't say death, the first Chinese person who collapsed in Metro Manila was early January. So there were people walking around. Oh, and just for perspective, there's 3 million Chinese in Manila. Because there's been a kind of a tie between the current president and China, where he's bringing in lots of Chinese, because the Chinese, the Communist Party Chinese, like to come here and gamble. And so you've got all these Chinese workers who come here, which is pissing off the locals, because they lose jobs to the Chinese who come in. And you've got all these people that were traveling back and forth in February during the height of this outbreak in China. that were directly from Wuhan. Some of them were directly from Wuhan. And the number I heard was 300,000 were recorded as traveling, and 6,000 of them were from Wuhan. So the Philippines has been exposed to the virus since as early, conservatively, as early as the 1st of January. Yet, we have barely broken 1,000 confirmed cases.
Right, yeah, and I've seen a lot on Twitter, especially throughout the entire world, that you know there are a lot of people that have said like you know in December or in January, like I'm like 99% sure that I had this and recovered. I've seen a bunch of personal reports of that. I think that's kind of the conclusion that people are coming to is that this thing's been here for a while, and you know I guess we'll kind of see what happens from there.
Well, you know, as far as the conditions under quarantine here, which is maybe something our listeners would want to know something about, because I have heard different accounts from different countries, right? Like I've heard from Europe, it seems like the French are fairly strict. The Italians are definitely insanely over the top strict. Guatemala, you know, it's kind of like here. You've got regulations in place to supposedly slow the spread. But there's really no evidence that those regulations are, one, being properly enforced, two, actually do what they're intended to do. So like I mentioned earlier, I was talking to someone else about this earlier too, so I might have confused the conversations. We're locked into our homes. It was in a correspondence earlier I said this. We're locked into our homes. Technically, you can't go out and shop unless you get a permit. Well, initially, wow. They would, right? So I think you can almost see what happened. They said, okay, you can't go out unless you get a permit. So where do we get the permit? Well, you have to come to the government office over here because every little borough has its own little, what they call barangay hall. And you have to come to this barangay hall and get your permit. Well, they were talking about social distancing. Well, that was only at the front side.
So every citizen has to go to that one government building.
Right. And so you got hundreds of people. They get them all 2 meters apart or 1 meter apart at the part that the government official is processing the paperwork, right? But all the people behind them are mobbed into this big mob of people. So you basically, if it's as contagious as it's supposed to be, you've now infected all these people. They're all mixing. I know they got little face masks on, but how many of them properly follow protocol and wash their hands whenever they went home?
Yeah.
No. So I'm very skeptical. And in fact, I think some people at the top realized that this was a bad idea.
Yeah. Yeah, it's certainly interesting situation there's the virus. The alleged virus. Last live stream we did was with David Crow, and he questions the origins of or he questions the existence of viruses at all. So there's that, and there's also the economic collapse portion of it, because I don't remember the percentage, but if half the world is locked down and not working, then that's a pretty big blow to the world economy, and obviously the U.S. economy has been slated for a collapse for quite some time, so we're seeing that come to a head too. So there's a lot of things happening, and it's certainly interesting time. So I guess you've talked a little bit about the lockdown there. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about there, or I guess could have you provide a brief introduction and background into your work?
Sure. Let me just say this: the people who are affected the most here are the poor. Absolutely, beyond a doubt, the poor are the ones that are the most affected, because the regulations themselves are not that hard to comply to if you have a little bit of money. But if you don't got any money, and to get that permit, you got to have an ID. And there's probably 30 to 40 million people here who don't even have birth certificates. So they can't get permits to go get food. Now that's something to think about.
Yeah.
Totally messed up. If this, I don't believe we need a centralized state to manage things like this. I do believe we need to be informed. You know, I've been in this game about as long as you have, as far as different explanations and ideas of what's really going on. And I don't shut the door to any of them, because one of my sidelines, which I'll talk about here in a minute, is I have a background in physics and math. So I know a lot about data analysis. And one thing is, I made a connection many decades ago with a journalist in the US that does science journalism. And he's asked me to help him out with some data analysis on the COVID-19. And let me tell you what, I've actually in discussion groups with people who are in research institutes in Europe. And they are saying that the data is just suspicious.
Yeah.
Very suspicious. The guy said, it's not possible that Switzerland, which is north of Italy, right? It's not possible that Switzerland would have all these confirmed cases and zero deaths. And then Italy would have all these confirmed cases and off the charts deaths. He said, even if you factor in that Switzerland has a better medical system than Italy, it shouldn't be like that. So the suspicion is that the Italians are mixing cases of other illnesses in with the COVID-19.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I saw that in a mainstream. I'm pretty sure I saw that in a mainstream media article, that the way they're classifying things, and that's how it started in Wuhan, was super broad disease definition. So like, and we talked about this in previous live streams, but it all leads to and then the 80% false positive rate in asymptomatic individuals. Like for example, out of Wuhan, if the mother had had flu like symptoms and tested positive for COVID, then they would test the family members and they'd test everyone she was in contact with. Well, the false positive rate for asymptomatic individuals is 80%. So like the testing in general is just very, very difficult. And you know, we talked about that with David Crow in the last episode. But it's very, very suspicious. That's a good way to put it. Suspicious.
Well, enough on COVID. Just to talk about myself, to
sure,
get
yeah.
kind of a postage stamp of what I've been, how I ended up here and what my life has been like. I've kind of lived an eclectic life. I started out in elementary, high school, wanting to be a musician. So, because my family had a history of musicians, and one of my brothers was very, very, very good trumpet player. I did 6 years of music theory in high school, middle school, high school, you know. And toward the end of high school, though, I just got disenchanted with – I love music, but I just got disenchanted with being a musician. And I wasn't really that good. So I was like, well, I really took to math and science. So I went into undergraduate school and got a triple major in math, physics, and computer science. And I went to a year of graduate school in physics and burned out, seriously burned out. I just said, I had perfect grades, but I was like, I don't want to do this the rest of my life. I want to do something else. So I went back to my undergraduate school, got a master's degree in computer science. And somewhere halfway through the master's degree, a buddy of mine that I had met in graduate school was living in Hong Kong. He'd started a business in Hong Kong. So he invited me to come and spend a spring and summer with him. And I ended up meeting my wife, future wife, and we got engaged while I was on holiday there. And I went back. I finished my master's. This was 94. I went back. I finished my master's. No, that's not right. It's the years are making it all fuzzy. Anyway, I went back. I got my master's, and then when we settled back here in 96, we were originally thinking to just process a green card and she would go back to the States with me, but we just decided we didn't want to go back to the States. And I have to say, I've never regretted the decision. Even now, being locked down under this, I still don't regret the decision of leaving the Disneyland gulag that is the United States.
Yeah.
So initially, you know, I was kind of lucky. I had friends and family that kind of supported us for a few years, and we wandered around Luzon for a while, met a lot of people, made a lot of good contacts because my wife's family is very well connected here. And we started a business with another Filipino back in the late 90s, which lasted until the early 2000s. And at that point, he and I just decided that we're still friends to this day, but we didn't want to do any more business together. Mm-hmm. And I started doing solo consulting. At that time, I had classmates who were working as consultants with Microsoft. So they got me in on .NET at the very ground floor. I learned how to work with .NET. I'd learned how to work with open source software back in the late 90s. On solo myself, like JavaScript and classic ASP. And then after that, it just kept building, because by the mid 2000s, I had gotten some deals with some other friends that were in software companies in the States. So we started getting contracts in Europe, and that led to a 10-year partnership with a group in Europe, which ended up with them stealing my Filipino team and, running away with them. Ethical breaks. but now that actually turned out to be a blessing in a sense, because it forced me. I was kind of too comfortable. I'd been with that group of guys for 10 years, and I didn't realize that I could get better people. So what I have now, I'm much more satisfied with the group of people I have now than that group. So by 2015, I was back doing contracts in the U.S. And all along, you know, I guess you could say it was my waking up period, because I was a very system guy, even though I was kind of very contrarian and anti-authoritarian. I didn't really get the sink of just how bad things were until the early 2010s.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't, you know, it took me a while. Though my dad, bless his heart, he was a conspiracy theorist of the old school. I mean, really old school conspiracy theorist. I don't know if you're familiar with that rag, the Spotlight.
I should be familiar with it, but I don't think I am. Might be before my time.
Oh, man, this is like 80s. I mean, this is before you were born.
Yeah, well, yep.
And,
yeah.
Well, he was telling me, he said, oh, the bankers, they run the world, son. You know, the Bilderbergs and the Bilderbergs and the Warbirds and the Rockefellers, you know, all of this stuff. This is back in the 80s. And, of course, being a teenage kid, I'm like, huh, maybe dad. And now I understand that it's much crazier than that. It's even crazier than that. So we've been progressively building ourselves to be self-sufficient over the last 10 years. We're not as far along as we wanted to be, but, you know, you just do what you can. And I have a lot of people who are dependent on me, which means I have to think about more than just me. We've developed a very strong software consulting business. We don't do only website and web development. We also do consultations. We also do instruction. I've had a gig with a company for the last 3 years that they would ship me out of country to go teach corporations. So I've been to Taiwan, I've been to Sweden, and just in February I was in Montreal. So, and these are nice gigs. They don't usually lead to follow-on business, but they look really good on your resume. And as you know, you and I met, what, 3 years ago?
Four years ago. It's probably January of 2017, possibly. It sounds about right.
Yeah. So about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So, you and I have been collaborating on Liberty Under Attack and Vanu Podcast and Darklands, but you've also seen kind of the genesis of my Content Safe service.
Mm-hmm.
Content Safe is one of my pride and joy projects. It's not really at the financially viable stage yet, but it is at the usable stage. So we now currently help three different content creators synchronize their YouTube videos to BitChute, DTube, and Brighteon. We've got a pretty good infrastructure. We're actually thinking to reboot the infrastructure a little bit as we have time to make it a bit more generic. But we're actually to the point that we turned on our Braintree payment gateway this week. So we're at the point where we're thinking to generate some capital.
Okay.
This is going to be challenging because, this is not a great – this is a terrible economy.
Yeah.
But it's also going to be a place where content creators are going to be hypersensitive to having their content taken down.
Yep. Yep, that's true. And I was going to mention I mean, obviously, contentsafe.co. Last time we talked, which would have been, I guess, probably towards the end of last year. It was definitely necessary then, but it's definitely even more necessary now, with all that's going on. So, I definitely do recommend folks do check it out. And if you could you just give a brief overview? I'll put a link to our first discussion in the show notes. But could you just give a brief overview of what you guys offer through Content Safe for any potential content creators that might be listening?
At present, what Content Safe can do is synchronize videos from YouTube to BitChute, DTube, and Brighteon. We have an infrastructure that we can add other video hosting companies. We also offer to content creators hosting as well as software development and general consultation for marketing and other content-related matters. So we're trying to go out and help, not only help content creators fight deplatforming, we're also trying to help content creators make money at content creation.
Right.
And I do this not only as a venture to make money. I do this as a venture because I really believe that that makes a better world. It makes a better world if you let people speak. And I have a lot of, because of my experience in industry, I have a lot of ideas about how we can make content more resilient from takedown, which is why I got involved with you on Darklands.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, indeed. Indeed. So I was going to bring up one other thing with Content Safe. I was just curious, because we talked about IPFS last time. Were you guys, can't remember if you guys were going to integrate that, and is that still a plan? Could you talk about that? Just out of curiosity.
You know, IPFS is definitely still there. It really just is a matter of flipping a switch, because IPFS technology is such that all I need to do is launch a Docker container that's running IPFS and issue out the hash codes. If someone wants to do it, we can do it. And what's nice is that we're also looking for alternatives even to IPFS, such as Library, mm-hmm. which is another blockchain-based file distribution or video distribution platform. And I also still think, despite the fact that people argue to the contrary with me about this, I still think that BitTorrent, WebTorrent are a viable technology for distribution of video content. Though I do recognize that it's old school technology.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. So that's good to hear. That's good to hear. So I need to. I know we talked about it before, but I have that noddle, which I need to do some updating on it. Actually, which I'll have time to do that this weekend, so I should get on that. But I want to see if there's a way to get IPFS on that, because it's got a big hard drive. It, you know, it has the entire Bitcoin blockchain downloaded, so it has to have a big, you know, it has to have a big memory card in there, big hard drive. So I think it'd be cool to see if I could, you know, dual purpose that and also host you know, like my podcast or something like that. Not sure. Something I need to you know, reach out to Keto Miner again and see if see how difficult that would be. Because yeah, I think IPFS is a good technology, and yeah, I like the focus on resiliency. Because you know we content creators put a lot of time and effort into the content, and just the thought of losing it all. Which yeah, obviously I've backed up my stuff, but yeah, it's a scary thought, and people have lost everything.
Well, I archive if for the people that I support, I archive everything locally, as well as making sure it goes out to distribution platforms. And I think that what we're offering is affordable. It's not super expensive to do this, and there's a lot of options. Have you looked into Brighteon, by the way?
I have not. That the first time I heard about it was actually the first time you mentioned it. So yeah, I'm not familiar.
That is the guy from Natural News, Mike Adams.
Okay. Yeah, I'm familiar.
It's his platform, and it's got a little bit of restriction as far as the number of videos you can post, but he doesn't restrict content.
Okay, interesting. I'll have to look
And
into it.
it's kind of a vi it's a kind of a Vimeo model. So he has the videos that you could publish that are free, but he also has pay models. So that's something else you might want to look into for your publishing house.
Right. Yeah. I'm. Yeah. Definitely interested in other options. Yeah. Interesting. All right. Well, was there anything else you had to mention in regards to Content Safe? Anything else new you guys are working on, or anything else on Content Safe?
Well, anyone who's a content creator that wants to contact me, just reach out to me either on my webpage of Content Safe. I have a chat box there that you can contact me, or you can contact me directly at Matthew, that's MATTHEW dot Raymer, RAYMER, at contentsafe.co.
All right. Very good. Very good. So, the next thing, and I don't really have, obviously there's no new developments on it, unfortunately. I wish there were. I wish there were developments. I wish there was a, you know, a usable product or service out there. But Darklance is another project that we worked on for quite some time. Well, it started out as a cryptocurrency project, and then it kind of, I guess, got focused in on Darklance, the privacy-focused freelancing marketplace utilizing Bitcoin for reputation and payments. So I don't, yeah. There's no not really any updates, but I wanted to bring it up. I want to get it out there again. If you know, there's developers or anyone interested in you know, working on that. Obviously obviously I'm busy, but I would be if, you know, if there's people interested, I'd be happy to chat with them in the Discord or via email or whatever. You know, like I don't know, I've talked about this in the last couple live streams, but you know, building the Agora, building the Second Realm, you know, building these connections, whether they're digital, whether they're, you know, kind of in the digital Agora sort of setting, or if it's you know, local community sort of based. You know, these peer-to-peer relationships are going to be more and more important as these you know, as these privacy and surveillance state regulations come down. So I think, you know, Darklance was definitely important before, definitely needed, but the direction things are going, it's, you know, ever more necessary, just like Content Safe. So yeah, I turn it over to you if you've got anything.
Well, you know, I'm on the same page as you. I think that we should be looking at Darklance as not only a future thing, but a present thing. And I haven't forgotten about it for sure. And I see how, in some sense, it integrates well with what we're doing for Content Safe, since there is this transfer of data between peers that we are really interested in building individual networks for our content creators. and then reaching out to their fans and having those fans help the content creator get the word out about their content. And a sub rosa sort of network that's running, you know, underneath everything, a mycelium, so to speak, that's moving stuff around, that's very hard to figure out what's going on in, and it's very compartmentalized. It fits perfectly with Darklance, fits perfectly with content creation, fits perfectly with Content Safe. And what I'm looking for are systems that I don't need to host servers.
Right
now, I have to. This has been the disagreement I've had with other parties out in the community, that they're like, well, we got to have a final solution before we do anything. No, we don't, because that's just not the way it works. You got to have what you have right in front of you before you can go anywhere. If you wait around for the ideal solution, well, you're going to be waiting forever.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely true. That's definitely true. So yeah, I will, I'll drop links to the Discord and the website by this point. Gosh, I'm guessing it probably needs an SSL certificate. And the last time I looked at that, I need to update the image. So the site is in disarray. It hasn't been updated in quite some time. But yeah, if you do, the white paper is available there, darklance.net. Also I'll put a link to Discord in the show notes if you want to chat about the project. So yeah, it needs to happen. Definitely needs to happen. And I agree. We need to start thinking about it as a present project, not as a future one.
Yeah, and you know, one thing about technologies, for those geeks out there who are interested in this kind of thing, what I'm looking to recommend to all my content creators is ditch WordPress. WordPress, I know it's been established as the go-to technology for content creation, but I'm very, very, very concerned about corporate WordPress.
Yeah.
And you think, you know, it's not a problem. You know, we don't host off of WordPress.org or WordPress.com. We self-host.
They can still nuke you, though, right?
Man. They're knitting. Over the last 2 years, they've been slowly knitting Jetpack into everything. And it's getting to the point where you have to go in and change settings to keep it from locking you out of your own WordPress that you self-hosted. So it's time to stop using WordPress. And not only from a privacy, security, and integrity standpoint, WordPress sucks. It sucks. Let me say that again. WordPress sucks. And it doesn't perform efficiently. And in fact, I'm at this point, having worked with WordPress for almost a decade, I am convinced that there is no way you can make WordPress work performant in the modern internet. It's impossible.
Wow.
Because of the way it was designed. Yeah, it cannot be optimized. There are alternatives which are immensely better. And one is Gatsby.js. Gatsby.js is a site building software, for lack of a better way to put it. It's a CMS. It can use multiple different sources. If you wanted, let's say you had a WordPress blog and you had all your data in WordPress, and you wanted to switch to Gatsby, Gatsby has a plugin that will hook into the database of WordPress.
Oh, wow.
Make WordPress go into the back end, right? And pull data off and then re-render the pages.
That's pretty sick. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. And if you don't like the WordPress admin, you can use just text files with Markdown.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, it's good to know there's another option out there, because that is. I mean, I've been listening to Monica Perez's Propaganda Report, and she's been talking about I heard about her getting knocked off of WordPress. They took that. They've removed her site. Like I guess a moment ago. I mean, I just see. if content creators haven't been banned from YouTube or they haven't had a channel shut down, we're living on borrowed time. So we need to get mm-hmm. get our affairs mm-hmm. in order long before it's necessary. So that's a good idea.
Well, I guess that leads into our final topic, which is strategic relocation.
Yeah, it does. It does. So you relocated to the Philippines. I guess I'm just curious. You said that it was you met your wife and you guys just decided not to go back to the U.S. Were there any political motivations, or was it just kind of a decision? Like nothing really to go back to. There's just no real reason to go back to the States.
Well, you know, I have to say that I was very disheartened by American culture. So, and you know, as you grow older, you begin to realize that, well, the things that brought me here are still here. It's not like the Philippines somehow is this utopia of people who see things in a better way than Americans do. They have a lot of the same failings that American society does. But I will say that this is a much more, especially here in the North, this is a much more anarchic society. And I don't mean that in the sense of chaos. I mean that in the sense of it's an honor culture. They don't really, even though the Bludgies are here, there's clearly a sign that the Bludgies don't actually control everything. So, in fact, I've said it many times to my friends. I said, the central government just spouts off stuff, but actually the central government doesn't control the country. It's the individual provinces that control themselves, and they tolerate the central government because they get handouts from the central government. But you know, here you can clearly see with the quarantine that that the Bludgies are nervous. They're very nervous, and because they're nervous, to a certain extent, they're polite. Now, I've been hearing reports of some of them being rude here, but not like Manila. Manila, it's much worse. There was a police captain just the other day that some people in one of the cities of Metro Manila wouldn't obey the quarantine rules. So mm-hmm. he threatened to shoot all of them. And oh, wow. Someone caught it on cell phone camera. And the head of the police, the national police, was like, respect the quarantine, but we're going to be looking into this because we can't have our people acting like that. Now, that's an admission of fear. That's an admission of fear, because it's like, if he wasn't afraid of what the populace would do in response, he wouldn't apologize. Now, I like that aspect of Philippine society. Filipinos often will be critical of it, and they'll say, well, we're a very hard-headed culture. And I'm like, no, you should be proud of that, because don't stop being hard-headed. Don't stop being hard-headed. Be smart. I would say my advice to anyone who would want to relocate here, only do it if you're going to marry a local. Don't try to do it solo. Because let me tell you what, if you don't know how this place works, it will eat you alive.
Really?
You really have to know how it works.
Interesting.
And a lot of expats, they think they know how it works, but they have no earthly clue how things work here. And they come with Western assumptions and prejudices. And it's taken me a long time to understand that. You can get away with a lot here, but you have to know what you can't get away with. So as long as you have a local native and you have a good relationship with your clan, which is another problem expats have. They don't know how to deal with their spouse's clan. They often overreact because, you know, Western culture is very independent, individualistic mm-hmm. culture. And this is a very communal culture. It still is. Even after, you know, 100 years of Westernization, it's very communal. So you got to know how to play that game. It's a it's a tug of war between what the family wants and what you can give and what you want and what the family can give. And often in our case, the family doesn't give us money. They don't give us food. They give us connections. And those are more important than money. What you can get, what you can convince people to let you do or have access to. I love it here because I just feel like maybe if I believed in reincarnation, which I don't, I would say that I was a Filipino in another life.
Yeah. So I'm curious. I'm curious then. Are you talking more so like you've got to know how it operates for like if you're going to be doing business in the Philippines, or could someone like say if they're retired, could a foreigner go to the Philippines, you know, buy a piece of land somewhere and you know and live a good and comfortable life? You know, is that plausible in the Philippines?
I think again. Make sure you're married to a local because foreigners cannot buy.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. Still local. I would definitely not. I mean, there are exceptions, man. There are always exceptions to the rule, but I would definitely discourage, like say someone over the age of 45, I would discourage them from trying to do that.
Okay.
Under the age of 45. Yeah. I think you're young enough that you could learn the game.
Okay, interesting.
But I've seen older guys, you know, especially Europeans, man. I've seen Europeans come and they go to the bars and the discos and they marry. They get this bar girl and it's like, no, you really don't understand how things work here. And they think that that's the Philippines, but that's not the Philippines. That's the honey trap called the Philippines.
Got you. So I guess then, what would could you speak to? I guess the political climate. You've talked a little bit about the enforcement, the central government. What type of political system would it be there? Could you speak to the political climate? You know, the elections. Not that someone that's you know perpetual traveling or something is going to care too much about the elections, but how socialist is the economy? Could you kind of speak to life in the Philippines in that regard?
There are a lot of communist socialists here, but this country is as capitalist as it can get. There really is no – I mean, they have a paltry social welfare system. It is just paltry. You could pay into it, and you could probably get one hospital trip paid for. And, you know, anyone who would talk about, like, a universal healthcare here – yeah, they talk about it, but it's not going to happen. the economy can't handle it, period. So everything is capitalist here. And I mean, the socialists like to think that they can convert it into that, but they can't. It's not possible. It's not viable. So if you were wanting to get involved, I know expats who actually run really good local businesses. Now, I do international. I don't do local. So I found it a lot easier to work as a consultant with international groups than locally. But I do know guys who do import-export businesses here and do quite well. So I would say, yeah, if you are ready and you understand the culture and you have a partner that is a local and you have an established relationship with, yeah, definitely. But I wouldn't just do it casually.
Gotcha.
Am I answering your question?
Yes. That's perfect. And I guess another thing some things that might be important to American expats. What about gun laws there? What about I don't know, like maybe drug
foreigners
laws.
Foreigners can't own guns. Domestically, they can. They can get permits for guns. You can also, if you have the right connections, you can get concealed carry if you have the right connections. But as far as unofficially, there are guns all over the place unofficially.
Yeah.
So I've even heard of, you know, foreign expats with pistols. But remember, if you get stopped at a checkpoint, you're probably going to get arrested.
Yeah. Okay. So it's. So I was going to see if you could compare to Mexico, where if you get pulled over, it's basically just like I don't know. Like I've heard that. I've heard that. Yeah, it just comes down to a bribe. So it sounds like it's not like that in the Philippines, at least for that law.
Well, I mean, for locals, you don't have to bribe to get a gun. You just have to pay for the permit. Mm. But for a foreigner, you would definitely probably get yourself in trouble if you didn't have the right connections. And to be honest, like I said, again, it comes down to your tribe, your clan. If your clan, if you bring value to your clan, they are going to protect you. They will. They will protect you. But if you're just dismissive and treat them poorly and act like they're inferior to you, then I wouldn't want to be you.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Very interesting. So I guess your overall conclusions, would you recommend the Philippines for someone to relocate to in pursuance of personal freedom or an invulnerability to coercion?
Yes, but as long as they were willing to play by the local cultural rules.
Okay. Very good. Very good. So yeah, that's all the questions I had for relocation. I guess another thing that kind of comes to mind, because I don't know anything about the Philippines. What's the climate like there? Could you kind of speak to that?
We have a very temperate climate, actually. If you go into the sea level places, you're going to see temperatures that range anywhere from low 80s to the, say, 110 Fahrenheit. It can get quite hot in the lowlands, 99% humidity.
Wow. Yeah.
If you come up here in the mountains, it's much more temperate. We can see temperatures down into the 50s, maybe sometimes into the 40s. If you go into the highest points, you can see temperatures all the way down to freezing. But we don't get any snow.
Okay, gotcha.
On the high end, we usually are below 100 degrees. We don't really see anything over 100 degrees up here. And I love it up here. This is just absolutely a beautiful climate to live in. The only downside is typhoon season. In the mountains, it's an entire month of rain all the time.
Yeah, I remember at least a couple of calls we've been on where it's been coming down hard. You can hear it in the background.
Yeah, well, what I've done subsequent, because I've been creating a lot of video stuff, I have a bunker. I have a bunker down here. Bunker. You nice. Won't hear any rain down here.
Yeah. Eradicated that problem then. Nice.
Yeah, well, it took me long enough to figure that out, because this is normally a storage room. And it was actually an afterthought. Whenever we built the house, we realized that we could carve part of the hill away and build ourselves a nice storage room, and it turned into a great studio.
There you go. So yeah, as far as the temperatures, that sounds, I mean, I enjoyed Acapulco, and this is my only real experience outside of the States, so that's like my only reference. But yeah, so like 78 to 82 like all the time. But I do kind of enjoy like I'd prefer not to have temperatures down to like zero degrees, but you know, temperatures down to 32 or even, you know, temperatures down to 32, I don't really mind that much. And it sounds like in the Philippines, you can kind of customize the climate to your liking, which does meet a little feature.
Well, and what's nice up here in the mountains is you could get very rural if you like, but where I live, it's sort of like semi-rural, semi-urban. And I have access to pretty much everything that I would want for modern conveniences. I can get high-speed internet. Right now I'm on a 100 Mbps line. So, you know, if you're a remote worker, if that's how you support yourself, this is a good place. But be careful. In some cities like Manila, there are zones that the internet is really bad. And you should thick along what's called the cyber corridors, which is like where all they locate the call centers. You'll have these nice high fiber optic trunk lines. And that's what we just, you know, fortuitous, we ended up building right along a national highway, and all the fiber lines come up right basically at our doorstep. We've got fiber lines. In fact, the company was trying to sell me a 1.5 terabyte fiber line.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but I was like, that's $500 a month Yeah, about $500 a month. Yeah. And I was like, nah, I don't want to spend that much.
Right, right. So I guess, I did have one final question on that one, but I did just lose. What about, so say a Vanuan, they find a local and they want to settle down there in the Philippines, and they've got a passion for, they want to start an off-grid homestead. Would it be plausible? I mean, with our friendly, local
yes.
ordinances, that sort of thing? Could you speak to that?
Yes, absolutely. I know that there are, believe it or not, there are Mennonite communities here of Westerners, and they have set up dairies. So yes, it is possible to do that. And something else to remember: if you want to be a crafty Vanuan and use the political system against itself, the Philippines signed the UN Migrant Treaty. Remember, I told you I have an acquaintance here, another expat, that revoked his U.S. citizenship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he settled here. And he is now he's basically in limbo at the moment. But supposedly, I wouldn't want to jump in on this without seeing what happens with this guy first. Supposedly, they will issue him travel documents making him stateless. So
wow.
He said it's just like a passport, which is interesting.
Yeah, no joke. Yeah, as if you're stateless, then no one's going to be laying claim to taxes on you, if that's truly possible. Which I didn't think it was. But hey, if he can figure it out, then that'd be big. It'd be interesting.
Yeah, for sure. But like I said, this guy, he's formerly a U.S. citizen, and I would just kind of wait and see how his situation pans out, because. Whenever he told me he was doing it, I was like, well, man, it's your life. If that's what you want to do,
let me know.
Everybody
how it goes.
I've talked to this. Yeah, I will. I'll definitely keep you in the loop.
Yeah, that's, I remember you bringing him up before. Yeah, that's an interesting situation for sure. Indeed. So, yeah, I don't have any other questions. I don't see any questions in chat either. So I guess, Matthew, do you have any closing thoughts for the listeners on, yeah, anything we talked about from, the lockdown there in the Philippines, content safe, dark lands, strategic relocation, or I guess just any other general closing thoughts?
Well, I would say this is a good opportunity because of this pause in society to prepare for whatever's coming next. And I've seen people worrying or stressing out about this. And I think it was before the live stream, you and I were talking about why don't. This is a great time to learn stuff. And that's what I've been telling my family. It's like, the colleges are all paused. Like, learn something. Don't just sit there and listen to the panic mongering sort of nonsense. Go out and create content if you can, if you've got that ability. Come and talk to us at Content Safe, and we'll try to help you get an audience, and we'll help you get distributed across a lot of different platforms.
Yes, yes, indeed. Yeah, and I'm right there with you. I mean, I would certainly suggest, especially obviously go for something as productive as possible that you can, that you want to do, but then also I'd say really strive for that for self sufficiency and trying to break that dependence as much as possible. Because I know I talked to a couple anarchists too, like we've been Vanuans for a couple of years now. We've been working progressing, but this situation happened and we kind of got caught with our pants down is the way that we kind of explained it. It came up on kind of moving at your own pace is okay, but I don't know. It's there's a lot to be done. A lot to be done.
You know, it's like we were kind of prepared. So right now we're at probably 3 months of food, and I had not really been as prepared. I was like in January saying, "Whoa, wait a minute." I think I told you in chat, my spider sense was going off. Like, no, something's not right here. Let's get some extra stuff, right? Let's get some extra things.
That's when I started loading up the freezer with the deep freeze with meat. Yep. It was like, yeah, you know, feeling a little odd. Yeah. It was probably mid January. I started watching a lot of live streams on it, and I was like, you know, I'm not really panicked yet, but it seems like this is something to pay attention to.
Yeah, and you know, what came out of it from here is there was a little bit of doubt. Maybe sometimes my family says, Dad is a little crazy about this stuff. And now it's like, Dad, next time we need 6 months or a year's worth of stuff. Like, yeah, that's right. And I was getting too comfortable. You know, like things were fairly stable.
Yep.
It was easy to get access to stuff. We weren't really stocking meat, which is one of my big regrets. I had a nice gig several years ago, and I bought a big deep freeze. And I could have had that thing full of meat for a year's worth of meat, and it was empty whenever all this happened. I was like, well, I don't got enough capital to fill this stupid freezer.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's going to start. And the other thing I don't regret, because at points along the way, I was really beginning to wonder if they were going to like shut off our power or something. Because, you know, initially it's like there's no way to go out and pay your bills for electricity. And lo and behold, they actually said, no, you don't have to pay your bills just yet. You can wait. Yep. And
Can't foreclose or evicted. Yeah, I think in the States it's still like April 30th or it's something like that. Like there's some sort of date. But if the government's not going to allow people to go to work, you know, if they don't have to pay for a month, what are they going to do for that next month when that bill comes due?
That's, you know, right.
The banks aren't all
absolutely.
The banks aren't nice. Yeah, the big banks are not nice. You know, considering you know, the central bank is to blame for, you know, 1929, and obviously there's plenty of shenanigans with 2008. You can bet that mm-hmm. they want to get your house. They would love to foreclose on your house they'd love to foreclose on your house is the point. So, they would love nothing more than to be able to do that.
Absolutely. You got it right, and I think that another thing I was happy is that I have lots of paper books. over the years, I have a big, humongous library in my attic. And I was thinking like, oh, I might need this if there's ever an occasion that I have no power. So I haven't reached that point yet, right? But I've got a huge library. I don't need to worry about that. And, you know, we don't know how this financial thing is going to go over the next few weeks and months. So, you know, my family was asking me, well, what do you plan to do if the tap runs out? There's no financial funds anymore. I said, I'm smart. I'll teach people's kids, because they'll want to have their kids to have an education. I'll take chickens in exchange. I'll take eggs. I don't care. They know I'm smart. That's my street cred. My street kid is the guy who's smart. So
yeah,
I'll leverage that. My kids are smart. So it's like, nah, I'm not worried. I just think that it's one thing to be cocky, right? It's another to be aware of the problems that are right in front of you and not blind to them. But don't be afraid of them. Just be aware of them and then figure out how to deal with them. The other thing is, given the fact that the state changes its mind on how they want to do things, always be thinking one or two steps ahead of what they're currently doing. Think about, well, what if they do this? What will we do if they do this? Right?
Yep. Yep, definitely, and especially now with so yeah, we talked about it in the past couple live streams, but you know, considering you know mobile Vanuans, you know their lifestyle might be a little difficult at this time. And I mean, how could you foresee this? How could you foresee?
No,
you can't. Like you just can't. You can't. So you know, I it's still tough. It's definitely tough.
Well, and you know, it's a double-edged sword here, but one side could cut us, and that is that the restrictions that are in place, some of them will never go away. So that's going to hurt us because there are things that were not obstacles before that will possibly remain obstacles after this.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it gives us a vector. A direction that things are going so that we can kind of know where the next step could be. We didn't anticipate this particular situation.
Right.
But they can't reuse this situation without us having already planned ahead for it.
Yeah. Yep. Indeed. All right. Well, Matthew, thank you so much for taking some time to chat, man. I really appreciate it, and I'll certainly put any links you want in the show notes. And this will go on the podcast feed at some point. I've just been you know doing a lot of live streams this week. Haven't released anything on the podcast feed for about a month, but I will get it out on there. Get out on there as well.
Well, you know, do you know you're not really on the automation of Content Safe yet. We realize, oh, that was one thing I forgot to say. We can roll things out automatically to WordPress now.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a module we built late last year.
Okay. Very interesting. Very interesting. All right. So there's WordPress, WordPress, YouTube, BitChute, and Brighteon. Was that the Brighteon? Okay. Okay.
Yeah, Brighteon and DTube.
And DTube. Okay. All right, lots of options. Very good, very good. And did you want to go ahead and plug any websites you wanted to before I let you go?
Well, my company is Anomalist Design. That's Anomalist. That's Anomalist dot design. That's our portfolio site. You can find me on LinkedIn in Matthew Raymer. Please, you know, connect to me there. I do all sorts of consultations. You might also look at notmedicaladvice.co, which is Daryl Becker's new alternative medicine site. We host it and we support Daryl in his podcast, Not Medical Advice. He's also my partner in Content Safe, as well as a little small service we offer called IT Project Savers, which is a conflict resolution, conflict management to consultation companies. So if you have a project that you're having difficulty with your outsourced developers, or you are an outsourced developer and you're having problems with your clients, we offer consultation to help with agreements and project completions. And we also specialize in taking over abandoned projects.
All right. Very good. Matthew Raymer does a lot of does a lot. Knows how to do a lot of stuff. Definitely does. I think it's about time it's been too long since I've talked to Daryl, so I think it's about time I get it back on the show. Get his take on Content Safe as well. So, all right, man. Well, thanks again. I appreciate it.
Yeah, take care, man.
Yeah, you too. All right, and that's all we have for you. Please make sure to like, share, and subscribe, just in case the trend continues and Fascist Book continues to have us Fascist Book continues to have us around and monetized at that. So check out our website VanuPodcast.com for podcast archives, free books on Vanu, and much more. Also, please check out our sponsor, Libertarian Tech Publications. And again, I understand that funds might be limited right now, but if you are looking for some great anarchist reading material, we've got you covered. You can check out our full catalog by visiting libertyandertech.com, as well as our special bundles. And like I said at the beginning of the podcast, the audiobook for Second Realm Book on Strategy is now available on Audible / Amazon. As a special offer, you can snag a free download of the audiobook by visiting libertyandertech.com/SRAudio and signing up for a free trial via Audible. It doesn't cost you a penny, and it helps us out a lot. So thank you so much. in advance. And again, if you're locked down somewhere and you need some reading material desperately, get in contact with me and I'll get you a digital copy or digital self-liberation bundle to help you through these times. So my email is shane@libertarianattack.com or just send a message on social media. So I've got a couple episodes and a couple episode ideas in the works, so you can expect another stream here in the next few days, hopefully with Jason. I think doing a super practical introductory episode on prepping, survivalism, etc., would be valuable. Basically, practical direct action individuals can partake in to minimize their dependence and increase their invulnerability to coercion. Basically, like I said, I talked to a few folks, and we kind of were caught by surprise with recent events, and I'm sure others were too. So we want to get back to practicality a little bit, I think. Revisit some of those introductory subjects. And as you mentioned, we'll definitely be doing a Bonnie in the New World episode. We just have to see what that new world is going to look like first before we can do that. So anyway, thanks so much for tuning in, and I do hope you're staying safe and liberated. Until next time.